How to Talk to an Atheist. Well, that's what we got on tap today on Unapologetic, where we defend truth without compromise with Dr. Bobby Conway, the One Minute Apologist. I'm your host, Tim Hall. Well, Bobby, we're in May, Mental Health Awareness Month. We talked a little bit about that in some past episodes. What's been going on in your world?
Well, I tell you, that's a good topic just to even bring up. This idea of mental health is always close to my heart. I think about how many people are suffering. You know, mental health issues have quadrupled in COVID, and it's not surprising. And I really feel like the church needs to be ready and needs to be thinking very strategically about how to deal with the mental health crisis when the doors open again. And I'm thankful to hear that a lot of doors are opening and we're kind of moving past this. But if people show back up to church and they just hear from the pulpit that all of their problems is just their sin and that's it, we're being way too myopic. Sure, the fall has caused our mental health problems, but we need to help people to understand that they have to be put back together. So this is really a beautiful and wonderful opportunity that we have as a church holistically to be able to be empathetic to the people and the pain that they come into our churches with. It's an opportunity for us to be able to validate some of the suffering that they've been through.
Yeah.
It's a way for us to even help them. Like, picture pastors doing a series on Jesus' vision for your emotional life.
Oh, yeah.
Like, think about this. Like, people who feel like God's just out to make them miserable, Jesus says, do not worry. The Bible tells us to fear not. The Bible says, be anxious for nothing. The Bible shows Jesus comforting people in their depression. Come to me, all you are weary and burdened. So we literally serve a God who says, my peace I leave with you. He doesn't want us fearful. He doesn't want us worried. He doesn't want us in anxiety. He doesn't want us depressed. Now, that doesn't mean we won't have to battle through those things and life's not going to be there. But his vision for us is to find that deep inner contentment. And I think that what's the world got to offer for all of our emotions? I mean, neuroscience. Well, neuroscience is just going to explain our need for the transcendent.
Sure.
And so I'm thankful that we don't have to be either or. So you asked what's on my mind. Well, what's on my mind is how the church needs to step up and help those who are in a mental health crisis.
Well, and I'll take this opportunity to remind our listeners and our viewers that a few weeks ago we did an episode where we talked about mental illness, sick sin or sickness with Heather, with your wife. And so I would just invite anybody to head on over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/oneminuteapologist, and you can check out a whole playlist of unapologetic episodes. That's one of them. And there's a whole playlist of mental health stuff where you've explored that topic with your wife on a whole series of live streams over the last year. And so they can check that stuff out as well. So
I just want people to know out there that they're hurting, that they're not alone.
Yeah.
And I mean, I truly look at my family. My wife's got this sign up in our house that says, as far as everybody else knows, we're a perfectly happy family, right? Well, well, as far as we know, we're completely dysfunctional, right? I mean, we live day by day at the mercy and grace of God. We understand some of these issues called mental health issues, and we want to get on record and say, you're not alone. And, you know, misery loves company, so it gives us comfort to know that we're not alone, too.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm laughing because I think we could have that same sign at our house as well. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. When you look up from the outside or you look at your social media, it looks great. But when you open the door and spend some time with your family, we all realize that, well, not just your family, with my family, with anybody's family.
Let me share. Your family is absolutely a disaster.
Yes, we are.
Train wreck. And that's why I love you.
Well, yes, totally. Well, our topic today is how to talk to an atheist. And man, we could go, I think, around and around on a whole bunch of different subjects, but let's try to narrow this in a little bit. So far in the series, we've addressed how to talk to Mormons, how to talk to Jehovah's Witnesses, how to talk to Buddhists. Well, the first thing that we did is we kind of laid out what the Christians believe. And so I think with atheism particularly, there's going to be a wide variety of viewpoints on things like the Old Testament, on things like Jesus, because I would say that we can define atheism in a number of different ways, but it seems like the dominant way that particularly people on the internet that call themselves atheists are defining themselves are just they lack a belief in God. And whether that is an active, I don't believe in God, or whether that is just, I have yet to be convinced by any evidence that any Christian has put forth, that seems to be kind of the only thing. So it'll be difficult for us to go through that same process, I think. So in general, let's just maybe start with how we should approach someone that calls themselves an atheist in a conversation, because we're not going to be able to go down kind of, what do atheists believe about the Old Testament and stuff like that?
Well, I mean, in general, you'll have atheists that would be functional atheists, but they would be, professed agnostics.
Yeah.
But they function as atheists. Now, by the way, we've got people who are professed Christians and they function like atheists. And
it's very true, yeah.
So I would say one thing that we need to understand with atheism, it's not one size fits all.
Right.
They have their various opinions on things. I mean, you have the new atheists versus maybe your old guard atheists.
Yeah.
The new atheists are much more incendiary. They're like the fundamentalists, so to speak.
Yeah.
They're harshly antagonistic against belief in God. You don't hear as much about the new atheists today as you did several years ago.
Right. I mean,
it was absolutely the thing that everybody was talking about, was the rise of the new atheism.
Yep.
And the four horsemen. It's quieted down a bit, but it certainly is still around to a certain degree. But a true atheist is one who does not believe that God created this world that we live in.
Right.
They believe that we are basically functioning, we're dancing to the tune of our DNA,
right,
as Richard Dawkins said. And so what that looks like is everything kind of popped into existence out of nothing, that we've evolved over a process of time, that when we die, we just kind of go back into the ground, that there's no soul that transcends death. Atheists do have debate around, is there free will or not free will?
Yep, yep.
They have debate over, is there objective morality or is there not objective morality? They have debate on whether or not we need to get rid of and eradicate all belief, or some would say, no, we need to be okay with people kind of, having beliefs. But what's interesting is watching how atheists will even seek to, hijack things from the church. So like,
right,
now they got atheist church, right?
Yeah,
they,
yep,
want to have songs and they want to read poetry and all that. So it's not one size fits all, and it's not monolithic. And that's one thing that I think to begin with, what type of atheist are you dealing with when you are going to engage your atheist friend?
And so how would you determine what sort of atheist that you're dealing with in that? Yeah. What sort of process would you go through?
Well, for me, I think that it's important to know that there's not a one-size-fits-all atheist. Because, see, this is what we do. If we're not equipped, we'll think every Muslim's a terrorist.
Right.
Right? Well, every Muslim's not a terrorist.
Right.
So we really get a faulty understanding, so we're fed news of a certain brand. And frankly, that's what the world gets of Christians, too, right?
Right,
like,
yeah,
we're all just these crazy fundamentalists.
Right.
And so I think that if we're going to be thoughtful, we need to just be inquisitive in our relationships. And I think that's where you really begin to build relationships anyway. So you don't believe in God. Well, talk to me about that. I mean, and so you can begin to even engage, what do you believe that morals are objective? Do you believe that, that there's any hope beyond the grave? Because a lot of times, if they say, oh yeah, I believe that there is. Well, you might find that there's atheists that are professed atheists. They don't even understand their own atheism.
Right.
Did you know that atheists don't have a soul? So I do think that there is, atheists have a soul. Atheism doesn't have a soul.
Right.
So what we want to be able to do with our conversations is get them to help us to understand where they are at, and then we'll kind of know what we're up against.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've seen be the biggest dividing line in a lot of atheist Christian conversations is kind of the way we know things. What we agree is evidence. So even something as historically reliable as the existence of Jesus as a itinerant preacher 2,000 years ago, there are a small group of people, but that number is growing, that's called Jesus mythicists, that don't even give any kind of weight or credence to the historical data out there. What should we do with somebody like that, that's saying, I don't even think that Jesus ever existed as a person, let alone rose from the dead or is God at all? Where would you start with some of those questions?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thankful that isn't some massive movement. I mean, Richard Carrier was kind of, you know, carrying the torch on that. He's kind of become a bit irrelevant, you know, in the last few years. I do think that that's a high price tag. I want people to understand the price tag of something. Mm-hmm. Do you understand if you're going to dismiss the existence of Jesus, if you're going to treat history in the way that you have arrived at this conclusion by deconstructing it to the point that he never existed, are you willing to do that with all history? Mm-hmm. If not, why not? What kind of history are you willing to trust? I mean, it doesn't shock me that we have a bunch of opinions on who Jesus was. I mean, we can have an event take place where there is a shooting by a police officer, for example, of somebody. And you're going to have multiple opinions on that one story by the time the evening news hits.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't be surprised that we have to do a little bit of historical investigation. But I don't think the answer is to dismiss history as reliable. I think that that becomes very problematic.
So there is kind of the main thing that you and I would turn to kind of evidence the life and death and resurrection of Jesus would be the scriptures. And you often get a dismissal of, well, that's just testimonial evidence. So how would we deal with some of those kind of claims? We're talking to somebody that's like, yeah, but that's just stories that were written down many years after the fact. So how can any of them be reliable? We don't even know if Matthew, Mark, and Luke were the ones that actually wrote those things. How would we address some of that? Because, and I'm asking that specifically because I think we could get people fairly easily to the existence of God, some kind of higher power, some sort of being, something beyond nature. And I think that would be something that we can discuss a little bit more. But I think that idea of historical, like revolving around Jesus, is probably where a lot of people are going to really dismiss sort of the evidence.
Well, it's interesting. So I think we would have the cart before the horse a little bit, my approach, apologetically. Now, we're talking about how are we going to help an atheist, right? But we're a little bit on the defensive, right? Like, well, how are we going to deal with the question they ask us?
Yeah.
So which way do we want to go here? So I would say if it's me talking to an atheist, like I said, I'm going to find out where they are.
Yep.
And then I'm going to begin to address things. And typically, if they start putting me on the defensive about Jesus, I'm ready to talk about that. But I'm not in a hurry to talk about Jesus. Now, that could sound sacrilegious to some. That's because we have a problem here. An atheist doesn't even believe in God.
Yeah.
And so I want to be able to talk about arguments for the existence of God. So I'm going to talk about some of these classical arguments, like why do I think God exists to begin with at all?
Right.
And so therefore, I'm going to talk about the moral argument. I'll talk about fine tuning. I'll talk about the cosmological argument that, you know, everything that begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist. Therefore, the universe has a cause.
Yep.
And I think by getting into that, if we can talk now, okay, well, God exists. Has God revealed himself?
Yep.
And if God has revealed himself, who might that be? And that's where I would say, now we're ready to maybe start talking about Jesus. I think that God has revealed himself in the person of Jesus. Now, they're going to struggle with maybe the Gospels, and they're going to be leveraging, like Muslims would, Bart Ehrman's works.
Yeah.
But I would say, as it relates to the story of Christianity that makes it so compelling is the fact that it got off the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to remember that, yes, we do just kind of share stories, but this story got off the ground.
Yeah.
And it got off the ground through some very unlikely people. Paul the Apostle was Saul. He was walking with a letter to go and arrest Christians. I mean, think about this. And something transformed him. And he would go on and write half of the New Testament. I mean, it's incredible through that experience that he had writing 13 letters. Not only that, you think about the disciples. They could hardly follow Jesus. But after his resurrection, they would be willing to suffer. Some would even be willing to die a martyr's death. And so I think that the resurrection is the place that I just go. For me, it folds back into the resurrection. If Jesus rose from the grave, then he really did die. And if Jesus really did die, then he really did live. And when he really did live, he validated the Old Testament. And he said he was going to be rejected, die, be buried, rise again. and the comforter was going to be sent. Mm. Well, it all, so all of my doubts, all of my questions, that's where I begin to take an atheist to. So Gary Habermas had a debate with one of the most famous philosophers of the 20th century, Anthony Flew.
Yep.
And Flew was a well-known atheist, and he ended up becoming something of a deist,
right,
so to speak.
Yep.
And he began to be convinced with the fine-tuning argument.
Mm.
Now, what's interesting is who was Flew up against in his debates and friendship? Well, one of the greatest experts on the resurrection.
Right.
You know, you can throw N.T. Wright in there, in the world.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, he could never come to that place. But guess what? I think that Habermas was right in challenging him to think about the resurrection. And he never came around on that. So if we could talk to atheists and be equipped on some of the arguments for the existence of God.
Okay.
And be solid on the resurrection.
Yep.
I think that that could be a great place for us for conversation. Now, they're going to bring up the problem of evil. And here's something I like to say.
Okay.
Okay. So you bring up the problem of evil. And you struggle with believing in God because you think that he would intervene and he wouldn't allow so much suffering. Well, let's say I walk out of Christianity and assume atheism. Okay, well, now I've got an explanation for why there's so much suffering. You know, that's just, you know, makes sense on naturalism, evolution, natural selection. But I have another problem that I've just adopted that I can't really find good tension or good resolve with.
Yeah.
And that is, what about ultimate justice? So Pol Pot, Mussolini, all these people, they just get away from it. So now let's come and put our Christian hat back on. Okay, well, with Christianity, we do have ultimate justice, and we have ultimate promise of being able to deal with our suffering.
Yeah.
The problem that the atheist has is, why won't God intervene with the suffering right now?
Right now, yeah.
And we have to trust that God could have a good purpose for suffering and the evil that we experience that we don't understand. But see, when I consider that, that's the kind of conversation point. Okay, I'll walk away from Christianity, but now I've got a problem with justice. You don't want to come into Christianity because you have a problem with suffering, but I've got an answer for justice. And I've got an answer for suffering, ultimately.
Well, I think one of the things that I do want to point out with what you're doing and kind of give it some legs a little bit more is oftentimes the atheist goes want to say, well, you have to convince me, right? So they're looking, they're kind of shifting that burden of proof. And in some sense, what you just did, the way you described that is you're saying, look, we both have this problem, and kind of, yes, to get them to agree, yes, to some of that and say, which worldview best explains this thing that we're both looking at? Whether what worldview best explains our feeling of wrongness of something? What worldview best explains the laws of logic or the existence of the universe in the first place, or guilt, or all those things? What best explains the rise of Christianity, as you mentioned before, with, man, we have this giant movement. What best explains that? So instead of them just sitting back and playing the uber skeptic, if you will, and just saying, well, I mean, it could have been this or it could have been that, to try to get them to a place where they agree to kind of look at it together, right? Add some legs to that for me, if you will.
Expound on what you're asking me.
Yeah, just the why we need to be able to understand, look at our world together, and then come to the best explanation.
Okay, so I get what you're saying. So I think that is important, Tim, and I think it's exactly the conversation I like to have with atheists.
Yeah.
You know, let's just take one thing, like morality. What best explains morality?
Right.
What best explains, like, you know, reality just in general?
Yeah,
like,
the existence of anything.
Reality, I mean, it's steady state theory. It's always existed. It popped into existence out of nothing. It's an illusion, or it's we're created.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we don't live like this is an illusion.
Right.
So that doesn't really, you know, help. Things don't pop into existence out of nothing.
Yeah.
As it's been famously said many times before, you know, out of nothing comes.
Yeah, nothing comes.
Steady state theory has been refuted with second law of thermodynamics,
yep,
the expansion of the universe, and things like that. So I think the story fits better. The overall narrative that we're looking to make sense of in this world. See, here's the deal. A lot of times people have a problem with Christianity because they have a problem with a God who's going to judge their sex life.
Right.
I mean, we don't, but listen, there's things with Christianity in the story that's hard for me to relate to, Tim, when I look back and think, okay, there's some bizarre things going on in culture. But I don't want to have chronological snobbery just because I'm far removed. Like, I think that people think there's bizarre things in our culture.
Of course.
Get a sex change in our culture.
Right.
I mean, there's all kinds of things that would be really bizarre to the ancient culture about our culture. So we shouldn't think that we've arrived at normalcy.
Yeah.
We are a bizarre culture in many ways ourselves. I mean, I've said before, like, you know, people talk about we're slouching toward Gomorrah. No, we've become Gomorrah. We are Gomorrah. So when you think about the ancient world, there's things that I can't relate to. It doesn't make sense. But the overall storyline of what explains best how we got here, what explains best what's broken with us, what explains best this desire that we have to be loved by a God and to be complete with Him, what explains best the sense that we have, and this is not just a Christian sense that we're going to exist beyond the grave.
Yeah,
I think Christianity makes best a sense of this overarching narrative that we are created by a God that loves us, that something went awry with the fall, that we are broken as people, and we're trying to blame our brokenness on other people. We're trying to blame our brokenness on anything, but our brokenness is resulted in the fact that we have morally failed God's ideal for us as image bearers. We don't reflect Him. But a Redeemer has come in the person of Jesus to die on a cross for sins, rise from the grave. And we see the power of that story in the church as it grew. And then the fact that we're going to live with God forever. That makes better sense of a story, which, by the way, too, it's a theory, evolution. We talk about it as if like that's just this perfect story that has no falsity whatsoever. That's a theory.
Wow, that is fantastic. So there's a lot that we could go into when it comes to how to talk to an atheist and how to understand where they're coming from and kind of weighing those different worldviews. And I think we tried our best to be able to navigate some of those different conversations. Any closing thoughts that you might have around some of that? Any kind of tie-ups that we could just put a bow on this?
Well, I think that atheists or Muslims or whoever we're talking to are people who are created in the image of God.
Right.
And when we're building relationships as we should, we need to recognize that these are people that God loves, that we can have a friendship with people that view things differently. And, you know, we need to recognize the importance of pursuing people. And we got to make sure that people don't feel used by us. I remember I was in our neighborhood years ago, and I was spending time with some non-believers. And I found myself as a Christian and as a pastor hanging out with them. And I was drawn to them from the fact they wanted to be with me. And it wasn't because they were trying to convert me to anything. They just wanted to be with me.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes what people can feel from us as Christians is, do we just want to be with a non-believer because they're our project. We got to convert them. And if they don't hurry up and get saved, then we're just going to go on. They're still people. And God has given us a world full of people that we get the wonderful opportunity of loving. And we believe that our eyes have been enlightened and we get to share the gospel. But we don't have to coerce them. We don't have to freak out. We don't have to panic. We can love them and give them space to go on a journey. Whether or not they trust Jesus, we have the opportunity to be what I call fifth gospel Christians. And that is letting people see the light of the gospel in and through our life.
Well, that is fantastic. So thank you for tuning into this program of Unapologetic. We'll meet you next time. You've been listening to Unapologetic with Dr. Bobby Conway, the One-Minute Apologist. I am your host, Tim Hall. Be sure to listen to Bobby on Pastor's Perspective Monday through Thursday, as well as like, share, and subscribe to the One-Minute Apologist YouTube channel, where we have over 1,000 videos. We would also like to remind you that this is a listener-supported program. We would greatly appreciate your support in any amount so we could continue to provide this ministry. If you would like to be a part of our team in any capacity, please visit our website at oneminuteapologist.com. And while you're there, check out all of Bobby's books, courses, and even invite him to speak at your church or event. Thank you for listening to Unapologetic, where we defend truth without compromise.
This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.